The studio has been invaded by the gurus of how-to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. They visit us once a month, and we talk about home repair issues. We have a little quiz, and we take lots of calls and also invite your comments on our show page at WNYC.org. Your calls to 646-829-3985. Have I left anything out?
Well, I'm surprised you remember the telephone number. That's it.
Sometimes I remember. I've only said it 3 billion times.
Anyway.
Remember when you were younger and you knew hundreds of telephone numbers?
Yes.
Now you probably know three because auto dial or some other service takes care of all the rest for you.
Well, I was not very good on numbers. I was very good on manufacturers' names and places and everything. That was my greatest thing. Estelle could remember.
Your wife.
Oh, yes, Estelle, my wife.
And Lawrence's mother.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, we've cleared that up.
Get it all together. She remembered all of our clients' telephone numbers and their addresses and everything else. We didn't need a computer. Mm-hmm. Estelle was my computer.
And now the only way I can remember is how it configures on the on the touchpad when you touch it on a regular phone. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a visual than it is actually remembering the numbers. So, no, times have changed quite a bit.
Yes, very much so.
Well, we are going through a real terrible heat spell, and I assume that my electric bill is going to be extraordinary the end of this month.
Well, even if the electric bill goes up, that you really have no control. You have some control, but not great amount of control. What you do have control about is how comfortable you will be where you are. That's the most important thing. In other words, and to understand how the body works to cool yourself off, maybe you could make the system that you have work better. And that's really what the gist of it is. If you're an air conditioning, what they call HVAC engineer, they know how the body functions, and then they make equipment to accommodate your body.
There are some nights when it's not really hot enough to run an air conditioner, but at the same time, you need something. And I feel like I should have fans, air conditioners, I should have coolers, I should have dehumidifiers. Well, I could wind up with 85,000 different things in my bedroom.
But I think part of what you're getting at is the fact that humidity levels in apartments rise so much, or in houses, that you feel sticky and uncomfortable. But in the meantime, it's still kind of cool out. It's not, you know, maybe it's 68, 69 degrees.
But 75.
You're, 75 either. And you're blowing this air in from outside, but you say, God, I'm still uncomfortable. And for that, it wouldn't be a bad idea to turn the air conditioner on for a short period of time to maybe zap that humidity and take the and dehumidify the area. Another thing that I'm recommending people do, and a lot of people have this problem, especially with people with basement apartments or, you know, like in garden apartments and townhouses, that they should run a dehumidifier instead of an air conditioner during that period of time to bring the humidity level down for two reasons. One, it's healthier. Three reasons. The building will perform better, but also to try to stem any kind of mold growth that will happen. Because if you keep the humidity between 50 and 60%, you'll be more comfortable and the mold will not grow.
Yeah, but I just want to tell you, this morning NPR ran a fascinating story about a lot of homes that are sitting vacant because they were foreclosed on and they have not been sold. In fact, in some cases, they're held up because of paperwork. And because the banks have not did not run any heat in the winter and now are not running anything to cool them in the summer, they are filled with mold.
Yes.
What? And they are falling, they're deteriorating, and it's going to cost a lot more money.
Right.
To bring them back to a healthy condition if somebody ever does buy them.
I never could figure out the bank even making people move out of the house. Let them stay there at least until you find a customer for it, because a vacant building will deteriorate all by itself. It's part of nature to deteriorate.
It returns to nature.
Yes, it returns to nature.
Because
no question about it.
The building systems need to be It's not a shack. It's not a,
it's not a cave
it's,
either.
Well, it's off, certainly not a cave, but it's not a shack.
I have some stalactites in my
right. It's not a shack. It's not a shed. It's not a unheated garage. It's a home that has insulation. It has piping. It has systems. It has electrical. It's got copper. It's got all this equipment in there that has to be maintained and kept at a particular temperature and a particular humidity level. And what they're doing is, you're exactly right, they're throwing their money away. And Alvin is
making them unhealthy. That's the other thing.
But yeah, and they won't be able to sell them. Now it's going to cost, now they're going to take a bigger hit, because when someone comes in to sell it, they're going to get the mold guys, who their whole theory is mold is gold, and they will go in there and say, oh, it's going to cost $100,000 to get rid of all the mold. So now they just took the value of the building and cut another $100,000 off of it.
Or maybe more.
Or maybe more.
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
The other thing is, a building is no different than a human being. If you don't use it, you lose it. In other words, the building starts to suffer from atrophy. That's exactly what happens. The water stays stagnant in the pipes. The boiler is down in the basement, and nobody drains the boiler, so the winter comes along and it freezes the building, and the boiler is burst open, and you got to buy a new boiler. It's crazy.
Well, how
what
do you get
doing.
Rid of the mold?
The mold in due course will get rid of itself once you start to dehumidify the house and bring it up, and then with a little chlorine bleach or some disinfectant.
But there's always the problem. There's always the problem of the mold that actually gets in the walls.
Oh yes.
And if you actually happen to have a person in the population who is adversely affected by mold,
they can't breathe it.
They can't live there. That's done.
But getting back to being comfortable, that's a very important thing.
Well, is that what we were talking about?
Yes, being comfortable in your house. I mean, that's a I think that's an important thing. Everybody's complaining about the heat, and in a couple of months they're going to be complaining about the cold. This is natural with all human beings.
So otherwise, you move to Hawaii. Or San Diego.
Yes, or something like that. Actually, my son moved to San Francisco. It's a really very nice.
Your
thing.
Other son.
Yes.
We should make that point. This son
has
is
another
here.
Son. Yeah. When did that happen?
Oh, you don't know about that.
No.
Okay, he moved to San Francisco, but San Francisco is always cold. Mark Twain said the coldest winter day he ever spent was in August in San Francisco.
Yeah, summer's night in San Francisco.
Mark Twain doesn't. Yeah, Mark Twain didn't travel around the whole country much as I did.
Anyway, your point.
My point is that the idea is they're talking about moisture and all those things, and I think there are some times when just a small fan could make you feel fantastically comfortable even when the temperature is up in the 75 and 80 and 90 degrees, because what you're doing is, with a fan, you're forcing the perspiration on your body to evaporate at an accelerated rate, and that draws the heat out of your body. That's the whole principle of air conditioning.
Should we give people the quiz for this month?
I think we should.
Yes,
and then we'll take some calls. A lot of people have been calling in.
This is the thing this one I wrote for you.
Okay. Yes. A reminder that our number, if you want to answer the quiz or if you have a question for the gurus, 646-829-3985. If you want to write in a comment, don't give us an answer to the quiz, because we're only going to take them on the air. But you can tell us about any problem that you have by going to our show page at WNYC.org. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, talking with the gurus of how to, Al and Larry Ubell. Have I covered everything?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great.
You know, he's really getting to know his
I'm
business.
I'm becoming a professional after all these years.
Ooh. I'm going to get you a
Okay, what's the
I'm
going
to get you a spit medal. Listen to this. it's all yours. I wrote it for you.
Oh, you want me to read it? Okay.
Oh, yes.
Name the open-type arbor or passageway having a trellis-work roof with supporting columns on which climbing vines, plants, and flowers grow.
Yes. And this kind of thing, if you visit the Brooklyn's Botanic Gardens, they're all over the place.
Don't give any more hints. People actually know this word. They may not know that it applies to this.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. I think most people have seen this word in print at one point or another. Especially if they read British novels.
Well, it was actually brought to my attention by Estelle. She was reading a book that had it, and he says, what does this mean?
A British novel, I'm sure. But anyway, a couple of things I discovered in the bathroom the other day is that a lot of people have these suction cup mirrors or soap dishes.
Yes.
And you always find that it kind of slides to the side or it slides off the tile.
Yeah.
I found a way to stop it from sliding.
Really?
Put a little soap underneath the suction cup, then push it up. The soap dries
and
acts like glue.
Yes.
Another thing, a lot of people buy the mega size shampoos or hair conditioners and things like that, and then you want to put them in small ones, but it's so hard to get it from one bottle to the other. Put the bottle in hot water. Let it sit in hot water for a while. It thins out the shampoo. It makes it more viscous. And now we get it into the other. It makes it much easier.
Buy a funnel.
No, because the funnel gets all jammed up also. No. Warm it up, and it actually flows way better.
I can see
I'm
going
to start calling you Heloise.
You know, that's what Leslie said, my girlfriend.
A listener writes in fact, his name is Augustus. We're about to begin renovation of a circa 1905 townhouse in Brooklyn that has several layers of vinyl and linoleum over the original floors. A contractor thought asbestos was not a problem. The linoleum clearly has jute backing, so it's old-fashioned pure linoleum. What steps should we take to verify that the whole sandwich of flooring is asbestos-free before we start pulling the thing up?
You have to take a sample of each piece of different layer and send it to a laboratory, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It is no way visually or any hand-testing device that can tell you whether it is asbestos or not.
Chances are that if it was made before the 1930s, it probably doesn't have asbestos in it. Asbestos use didn't become very popular into the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and then into the 50s. One thing I do want to recommend is that all these layers, we actually have an acquaintance from many years ago during the 60s,
oh,
early
yes,
70s.
That's an interesting story.
That was doing a brownstone renovation, and because they were amateurs, see, a professional, if you have linoleum, if you have 3-4 layers of linoleum, a professional will stick a spackle knife under a corner and roll all the layers up together and throw the whole thing out at once.
Right.
These people weren't professionals, so they pulled each layer off individually between two of the layers. I think he found close to $20,000 in silver certificates of $100 bills.
All pressed out between
the layers.
Can you still cash them in, or do you sell them?
Well, back then, the 60s, he probably – I don't know what he did with it. That wasn't my – but what a find. I don't think the house was worth that much.
No.
Good luck in pulling this stuff off. Let's take a call. We go now to Sylvia from Brooklyn Heights. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Sylvia.
Yeah, hi. I have a problem with my bedroom air conditioner.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a co-op, and a couple of years ago, they had all the air conditioner sleeves. It's through the wall. They had all the sleeves enlarged, and I have a small conditioner, like 5,000 unit, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They enlarged it, and there are these huge spaces on either
mm-hmm.
side, like it's about I'd say 8 inches wide to about 18 inches. High the spaces on either side
mm-hmm.
of the conditioner, and because I'm on the main floor, I'm very much close to the ground level.
Yes,
a lot of water has come in. Anyway, I don't know if my conditioner is still really serviceable or functioning or not. But if I have somebody come in, I was told that mineral wool could be put in there. It wouldn't be a fire hazard into the spaces. If the conditioner, is smaller than the space. Is that true?
No, the problem with using either mineral wool or fiberglass or anything like that is that though those materials are insulating materials, they don't stop airflow. They all actually act more like a filter than they act like a stoppage against an air gap.
That's
so
right.
So you actually have someone fabricate a, a filler strips to go in to actually stop the airflow. Then the insulation would be put in once you stop the airflow as a thermal resistance.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean by strips.
Well, the problem is that all your stuff is that there are probably gaps all around the air conditioner, correct?
Yeah, but I have another one put in. I mean, it's going to be small also.
Well, let me ask you a question also. There's a quick question. The air conditioning sleeve they put in, is it a Fetter sleeve? manufactured by the Fetters Corporation?
I don't think so. I think it's like a no-name something.
But it has to be a size that a particular air conditioner would fit into.
Well, most of the people in the building have much larger conditioners than I have. But I need a small one because I don't like a lot of
What Lawrence is trying to say is that you need some sort of rigid material to go in, and then insulation go on one side, and on the inside another piece of rigid material, and that has to be put in with caulking compound in order to make it an airtight condition and insulation.
She just has to find some way to fill that space.
You have to get, some sort of mechanic that knows what to do.
Yes.
Okay. A listener in Greenwich Village writes, when renovating a shower stall, retiling the walls and floor, does one always need to install waterproof board for the walls and waterproof sheetrock on the ceiling? There are no structural problems with the shower. We're just updating the tiles.
It is best that they use this concrete board or wonder board.
But I think what they're really saying is that they want to put tile over the existing tile. And you can do that.
Oh, if you set over the existing tile, yes, you can.
You can do that.
But you can't. But if you pull the tile off and put new tile on,
you gotta. If you're gonna pull the tile off, most likely you're gonna rip apart whatever the underlayment is anyway, because the tile's not gonna want to come off easily.
Even if it's an old system with what they call a mud job or a wet or something that there's now dry set and then there's the old mud set. Mm-hmm. But once you start tearing that stuff apart, it's got to be cleaned out and start over again.
But working with Wonderboard is actually quite easy, and especially there are pamphlets that the companies that make this material give out and tell you how to do it properly. So, and you'll get a much better job.
Yes.
We have some people who've called in with answers to the quiz. Should we check them out?
Let's give it a crack.
Faith, what do you think it is?
Trellis.
A trellis.
It's a type of trellis. It has that kind of configuration, but the trellis happens to be part of it, but in its whole totality of the structure has a specific name.
Okay, let's go now to Chris from Long Island City. Hi, Chris. What do you think it is?
I think it's a pergola.
Well, that took long.
Actually, he was the
first. I had to look up about five times when coming across it before it finally stayed in my head, so I was thrilled to hear the question, actually.
Actually, Chris is one of a number of people who had the correct answer.
Aww.
I always thought a pergola was a little pergola.
How's my little pergola?
Okay, Chris. Well, you're going to give Chris a prize, aren't you?
Yes, we're going to get the Save Energy, Save Money by George Merlis and Al Ubell. And this will save you energy if you read through the book and follow its procedures. It is something in there that's really wonderful. I quoted that at some point in time, the solar voltaics will become a major factor in saving energy, and it is coming to that point now.
Now, Chris, I'm going to put you on hold, and one of my producers will take all of the important information so that they can send that book to you, okay?
Great. Thank you, Leonard. Love your show.
Thanks for listening.
And we're going to take a little break, and then we'll come back with more of your calls and your questions to the gurus of how-to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors. That's how they make their living, actually, Brooklyn, New York. We're back with the gurus of how to, Al and Larry Ubell, and we're taking your calls at 646-829-3985. Also, you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And let's take care of one of those comments. Mike in Inwood writes, a few years ago, I started painting the living room in our co-op apartment on my vacation. It took longer than I anticipated because the plaster on laths had numerous soft spots that became holes, and at the end of my time off, I just slapped spackle on and painted when it dried. The result looks like the wall has a bad case of acne. I'd like to fix this, but I don't know how to go about it. A painter looked at it and suggested tearing out the plaster and installing drywall, but I can't afford that. Can I sand or scrape the scabs flat and re-spackle?
Well, the thing about it, he says it looks like it has acne, which is telling me that either he painted it before it was dry.
That's true.
And the moisture from the spackle kind of came out while the paint was drying. Or when the paint was dry, the spackle was still sealed and wet. So what I would try in those areas, I would just try for now sanding down those areas and reapplying a coat of paint in those areas. Unfortunately, if he did it a long time ago, the paint probably is oxidized by now, and it's going to be very difficult to get the paint to match anymore.
But it's all dry, so it'd probably be easier to sand.
It'll sandpaper better. But for all those people who are attempting to spackle, the best way to do that spackling or compounding, as it's called, is to use a wide trowel. The wider the trowel, 12 inches, 18-inch trowels that they have.
Even a 10-inch trowel will
work. Any 10-inch trowel. That gives you a smooth. Don't try to do it with a tiny little 3 or 4-inch spackle knife.
Or even 6-inch.
It's not going to work. You got to have these wide trowels so that it comes like a smooth surface, and that's how you work it out. And also what you could do is before you walk away from it, if you have a spray bottle with some spray water, you spray it on the trowel and go right over it the last stroke, and it comes out.
So it's kind of like a squeegee almost.
Exactly.
That's the way you do it.
Yes.
Okay, let's take a call from Philippe from Brooklyn. Hi, Philippe.
Hey, Philippe.
Hi.
Hey, Leonard. Hey, guys.
What's up?
I've always wanted to ask Larry this. I'm listening to you guys online since I'm in the office.
Yes.
And my wife, April, said to me many moons ago she used to play bassoon with Larry, the
April,
jack of all trades, and I wanted to ask him if he's still playing bassoon.
Chapman is what's her last name?
Chapman, indeed.
Oh, give my love. She actually bought my profiling machine when I was divesting a little bit. No, I still have the bassoon. I still play from time to time.
Yes. He's truly a jack of all trades.
Yeah, I do. Give my regards. It's been a long time.
Thank you so much for calling.
Take care.
Louise from Park Slope. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, gentlemen. I live in a brownstone in Brooklyn, and there are fireplaces in all five floors. One of the tenants in the house, this is a co-op.
Yes.
Recently broke down one of the fireplaces in the apartment and covered it over with sheetrock, I think.
Yes.
But I don't think they did anything about the chimney. And I was wondering if that is a fire hazard.
Well, I would have to, you know, what you're asking is a very important question, because I come across this on a daily basis because I do a ton of townhouse and brownstone inspections. I don't know what they did. If they just covered over the existing fireplace and left everything, the hearth, you know, and the fireplace breast intact, then it shouldn't really have affected any of the lower chimneys.
Because that would be the equivalent of just not burning anything in the fireplace
under normal circumstances. Well, hold on. Do people in the co-op actually use the fireplaces?
Some people do.
Okay.
Some don't.
I would actually at this point, because this is a real valid concern, and I don't want to get too deep into it, but at this point in time, I would actually call up, get a fire chimney contractor or chimney maintenance firm.
Chimney sweep.
Or fireplace company. And they are certified, these chimney sweeps, to really examine each fireplace. And if it's not...
You get Mary Poppins.
Right. Or actually, it wasn't Mary. It was actually, what's his name? Van Dyke's brother. Uh-huh. Anyway. And
Jerry.
Jerry's brother, right. Dick. Anyway, but they should have it inspected and to see if there are any gaps. Because here's the sobering thing about these fireplaces and chimneys, there's only one width of brick between the fireplace flue and the interior of the building if they're not lined. So they need to be examined. If they're not lined, all of them should be lined, and it's very, very important. I don't want to get deep into what really has to go on because this is a lot more than a simple home repair.
Yes.
This is a life and death issue because if they run and they don't work right, carbon monoxide and other combustible fumes can enter into the building. So that would be my recommendation.
Yes, you also have to appreciate the fact that each fireplace has its own distinct dedicated flue. They all don't go into one flue. They go into a bunch of flues, mm-hmm. And each one has to be perfectly separated from the other one so no gases mm-hmm. move from one chimney to another.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Val in Rutherford, New Jersey writes, our roof seems to be melting. Whenever the temperature goes over 75 degrees Fahrenheit, the roof gives off a strong smell like tar. It wouldn't be intolerable, but our forced air system is in the attic directly under the roof, and it circulates it around the house. The HVAC unit is in an enclosed space that gets very hot. How dangerous is this for health? I get headaches and a bit nauseous, so we only run the air at night when the smell is weaker. I have two young boys at home, and I worry about them as well. Is there any way that we can fix this without changing the roof, which we cannot afford to do right now?
Before I let you answer it, I'm going to say, if you're getting headaches and you get sick,
it is dangerous.
Okay, but
because you want to know something, your body is the best an alarm system that you could ever have. When you sneeze for a reason.
Yeah.
And when you cough for a reason.
Your body is the canary
in
the mine.
However, the material that they probably used is what is called asphaltic cement, which when it gets a little high temperature or the sun breaks down, it starts to melt again. It's a cement that is supposed to go between a layer of asphaltic material, hard material like modified bituminous or something like that, in order to cement the two pieces together. But if they just use that cement on the surface and something like that without coating it over, it will the vehicle that brought it together will start to evaporate, and that's what you're smelling. And that's
but I have to say, they shouldn't be smelling it when they run their air conditioning system.
Right, that's dangerous.
So that's actually the issue. So the issue is either their return air vent has a hole in it in the attic space, or it is located in the attic space, or for some reason, because the return air for central air conditioning systems should only draw air from the space that you're cooling, or in the case of heat, heating. So if it's getting the smell, because the smell is not being generated in the livable space, something is going on, and that needs to be really investigated by someone who knows what they're doing and has experience with this kinds of...
They have to do a smoke
test. But this is less about changing the roof and more about fixing the central
air conditioning. There's something wrong with the air conditioning system.
They have to do a smoke test to find out where the leaks are in order for them to correct it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Charles from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Charles.
Hi, Charles.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I spoke to Lawrence or Al a few weeks ago about a smoker in our building next door. We live in a co-op, and they gave me some good advice about the air, you know, sealing off the, and the air conditioner has been working great.
Okay.
But my wife and I have an ongoing argument about keeping them on, and she's always turning them off to save money, and I say, if they have an energy saver function, why not put them on energy saver, which is cheaper and which is more economical in the long run than cooling your apartment, is leaving it on, say, a minimum comfortable temperature and putting it on energy saver or turning it off and then having to recool the whole apartment.
Charles, is this the worst argument you and your wife have?
No, believe me, no.
Okay. But anyway, we're getting a little feedback from you, but let me answer the question. Here's the situation. The problem with turning it off and turning it on is you do overload the units. They tend to work very hard for that period of time. But there's also the principle that when it's off, it's not consuming any energy. So, like for instance, at my house, I tend to keep my units at a higher temperature when I'm not home. But again, I know you're going to make fun of me, but I have the remote access. So about an hour or two before I go home, I turn it on so I can be comfortable.
But you're running it still. You're running at a very
I have a couple
level.
Of cats low there. And I have a couple of cats at home, and I don't want to come home to no cats at home. So I run it. I leave it at 80 degrees in one part, whatever. But the point is that turning it off altogether does save more energy, but the place is going to be uncomfortable for at least an hour or so until it gets it down to the temperature. So I actually do like the energy saving function, but set it up to maybe 78 degrees, 79 degrees when you're not home. And that way you're not cooling it to that level, but when you do come home, it doesn't have to work as hard.
Yeah, you have to understand one thing about cooling or heating. What you're doing is not only heating the apartment, but you're heating all of the furniture and all the carpet, the floor, the ceiling, the walls, and everything else. And then when that is warmed up or cooled down, that's when you feel comfortable. But as long as they are differential from your body desiring temperature, you're not going to be comfortable. Mm-hmm.
So when somebody comes into my house and says, that's a real cool sofa.
That's what they're talking about.
I always wondered about
that. Yeah, daddy-o.
Elizabeth from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Elizabeth.
I think I am now Elizabeth.
Okay.
Question, we have small bedrooms, and the windows are too small for most standard air conditioners. What is the
and this is a rental?
Deal with these portable air conditioners? Are they viable? Are they usable?
Is this a rental?
And how do you vent them?
Is this a rental?
No.
It's a co-op.
It's a Victorian.
It's a Victorian. Okay, I got it. Well, you know, the thing is, if you're the owner, I would those remote ones that have the like the Robbie the Robot ductwork that goes out the window, those are effective, but they do use some of the cool air that you're producing to cool the coil, so you're actually throwing away some of the air that you're already cooling. My feeling is if you can't do a regular air conditioning unit and you can't do a traditionally ducted system, then probably what you want to go toward is probably the ductless systems, which people normally know as the Mitsubishi or Thin Man or Thin Line units. And that way you can have a remote compressor outside, but it doesn't take up a lot of room, and you don't use up the window space for an air conditioning unit.
And they have these types of units that hang outside your window and have the compressor and everything else is hanging outside the window, and then the circulator fans are inside the window, and it doesn't block anything of the window out.
But the other thing that's very important about these is that if they do use these ductless systems, that the condensate drains have to be put in properly. I just got finished at a house at a condo in Brooklyn where where during incomplete construction they put the condensate pipes in, and then when the plumber never came and hooked them up, so they were just draining inside the walls. So that's a very important part also.
David in Bushwick writes, my wife and I are purchasing a 1920s Brooklyn townhouse and have discovered lovely old tin ceilings under a drop ceiling. We'd love to restore it to the original look, but is it safer to avoid the possibilities of lead paint and just patch and paint?
As far as lead paint is concerned, if you get qualified lead paint contractors, they can do a very safe job, and as long as once the work is done, you do some lead clearance testing after it, and that means they do dust wipes of the floor and of the windowsills and then do analysis. If those lead levels come down to where the clearance level is below the EPA level, then you really shouldn't have a problem with that. And so I'm not that concerned. But I also have to let you know that they actually do make new tin ceilings.
Yeah.
So you can buy anything that's there that's pretty cool and look shiny and new, and just leave what's in place, put this over it, it encapsulates the old stuff, and you're good to go.
In fact, that's what we did in our office.
Better than a drop ceiling.
We have a tin ceiling that we came in and we saw it was beautiful, and we just had a couple of patch ones that were corroded away, and we found that they're still manufacturing these tin ceilings.
And they also make drop ceilings that look like tin ceilings, but those are a little cheesy.
Ben from Westchester called in to ask, how do you prevent rust on outdoor light bulbs, and how do you remove a rusted bulb?
I don't think he means the bulb. Well, I don't think he means the bulb itself. He probably means the fixture itself is probably rusted, so it probably wasn't a good quality light bulb to begin with. How do you get the bulb out? One of the things is make sure the electricity is off. Spray a double. First thing you do is if the bulb is broken off, get some epoxy putty and a ice cream stick, and mix some stuff of epoxy putty. Throw it into the broken socket, and then stick the stick in.
You could use a kneaded eraser to do that as well.
Well, you could use
white bread. You know, the only reason to buy Wonder Bread is you wad it up and you
put
it in.
Hold on there.
An old bagel works really great.
An old bagel, okay.
A bialy works nice. Or a Crolla. But if it's outside and you're on a ladder, a potato people have used.
That also works, potato sounds really good.
To get it out, if it's rusted in places, spray some WD-40 up into the light fixture and work it a little bit until you can get it out.
Yeah, and anytime you buy any kind of light fixture for the outside, you got to mark it. This is for exterior use, because the interior use units put outside, they oxidize right away.
Yeah, well, you got to buy special light bulbs.
Yes.
Robin from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a studio apartment, and one wall faces the street. It has two windows. Below the window on one side is the air conditioner in the wall, and on the other side is the radiator. So the paint on the windowsill and below the air conditioner and the radiator cover is all, it's shredded. There's
peeling.
Chips. and yeah, peeling. And every day there's dust to sweep up. So I was thinking if we'd fix it ourselves, what kind of paint could we use? Because they just slap on the cheapest paint and the same as the whole apartment. So
well, the best kind of paint to do something like that is first you have to clean off all the old paint and get down to the raw wood. And the best kind of paint is an epoxy paint. If you put that on properly, two coats of that epoxy paint, and let it cure out, then you'll never get the peeling and the crackling and the falling apart.
Now, when you say raw wood...
If it is made out of wood.
I doubt it.
If it's made out of metal or something like that, you still got to clean it down to the metal.
Metal.
And the epoxy paints are great for that.
But remember, before you paint, clean it up with a regular rubbing alcohol, which will take off all the grease, let it dry, and that'll work very well also.
And last but not least, I always tell people, when you buy any kind of paint, read the instructions from the manufacturer.
We have very little time, but a number of people have called in to ask, when you're going out to just buy some inexpensive air conditioner, you know, small room, those $99 air conditioners, what should you look for?
Well, look for that. They give you a table on the different matches of square footage, and always buy the next size down. Never buy one oversized.
So you run it at the highest level.
Because you want to dehumidify the space.
But also, I have to tell you, go for the volume of the unit, because I just went through this again with my girlfriend, where we bought one that was cheap, and it was so loud we had to return it.
August 10th is the date that we expect to see the gurus return. And what's going to happen in the interim?
We're going to go, as always, go forth and fix, save energy, money, and...
do it safely.
And I thank you both so much for being on our show today. Write to Larry Ubell at...
LarryUbell.com.